And usually we just start kind of by asking biographical questions, like where were you born and when, and if you weren't born here, how you ended up here.
Well, I was born in the hospital in Chattuck, Oklahoma. My mother had been in labor 72 hours, and they took a doodle bug from Spearman, that's a little train. And the doctor, that was the only hospital close, met us with his little, I called it a bread wagon, and he took her to the hospital, big old frame building, and did a C-section. And then they came back the same way on this little old train. And train ran Perriton, Morris, Booker through there. But she, they came to this country, my mother's people, in Old Hansford in 1901.
Hansford was your mother's?
Well, she came in 1901. She was seven when they got there. Mm-hmm. And then they moved up here. They had a store in Goodwill in 1910. General Mercantile Store. And then he was the deputy sheriff. And on one side in Texoma, and the marshal on the other at the same time. The depot came through an angle in Texoma. And if they knew they were wanted in one state, they'd all come down together and visit there. And they'd kind of toe that line, but they wouldn't cross it if they were wanted in the other state for some.
What a crazy.
And he would arrest somebody, and they'd had so many trains, they'd take them to Guyman, put them in jail, and then come back.
What year were you born?
26.
26? What's your story?
I was born in 1914, and it was south and a little east of Hooker, about between seven and 8 miles. And we lived in the section across from where my grandparents lived, which were my dad's parents, and that I was born at their house. They even papered their living room for my appearance. And mother said it got so hot there, but you couldn't open the door because it would peel the paper, you know, dry out the wallpaper too much.
That was a nice thing of them to do for your arrival.
Yeah, it had to be because people might come to look.
So you were born just...
I was born south of Hooker, between 7 and 8 miles. In fact, it's all south except for about a mile on that corner is where my grandparents lived, in that section over there.
We just came from up here. You were up there doing another session.
And that's where our good part of my years, and then about 1919, we moved to a farm further south. We lived about 15 miles south and east of Hooker, actually. If you know where Optimo Dam is,
yeah.
Well, it's about the second or third section to the north. There are only about two houses north within any distance of Optimo Dam. You know, there are not many houses there.
Right.
But we're the one that's, if you came around that corner that's cut off everywhere, it's closed up. It has had dead corners going two ways, but goes up a little to a rise. That place now is where I grew up until I came to Goodwill down here, which was in about August of 36.
So you just traveled, you just lived all in this little triangle?
All that, just lived down here, except for about 7 months out of 1 year that I lived somewhere else. Other than that, I've lived all my years right here in Texas County, in the same area, almost.
And once you moved from Shattuck to Texoma, is that right?
No, I was born in Shattuck. I didn't intend to be. I intended to be born in Spearman, but...
Things will be how they are. Where did you go from, your family go from there?
Spearman?
From Spearman to... Texoma? Or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. My father, when my mother died in 33, I was just barely seven, And he was the NRA administrator in Spearman. And, you know, that came to a halt about the end of 34. The Supreme Court declared it illegal.
Yeah.
So then he bought, he had worked, he had managed the store in Spearman for Tiff Thomason. And Tiff had taken bankruptcy. So before Daddy was NRA administrator, he worked for Mr. Brailhart at the ranch as a cook. My mother had a beauty shop and 40 other things she did. And we had, everybody had a big crop in 31, wheat crop, and the market broke.
Yeah.
And so it, the dust storms didn't start till the next year.
You remember 31 as being the year when things started going downhill?
Oh, yes, absolutely, because they, you know, they were, people were buying tractors and starting to do things in a big way, you know, and tractor, you think of the price of it now as not being very much, but it was, and they were operating on borrowed money. So they had this whale of a good crop, and they'd had a fairly good crop the year before. And Texoma and Spearman both, 1926 was considered a boom year. That's when Tip Thomason had a store in Boy City and other places. So after Father was NRA administrator, then he bought, well, assumed some of the indebtedness that on the store in Texoma, a Tiff had put it in his wife's name, and it wasn't taken during the bankruptcy procedures. So he 1935, he fully owned the store. And I was, summer vacations and holidays, I was in Texoma, and school year, I was in Spearman. So I was
back and forth.
Back and forth. And my cousin was born 2 miles south of Texoma, and the house he was born in was in Texas. And that's where he's first registered, and they resurveyed, and it's now Oklahoma.
things get messy on that line.
Before he was born, this house, it was the old Hook place, they called it. It was 2 miles from town. And a lot of times in the summer, Jody and I would, wasn't that business in the store, and we'd go out there, and they had drifts of sand where they'd blown up, and we dug one of them out, and it was a hog house. It was, we just thought it was dirt, and it was this nice little cool, been a hog house. And of course, Red leased the place, he didn't know they were there, so we dug, each one of us had one. And
you each had your own hog house.
Yes. Yes. And it, I would guess it didn't smell bad, but I guess it was because they hadn't had anything in it for years, and it's so dry it couldn't. So
yeah, it was cool and nice in there.
And so we were, I was helping Beulah one day. She had hands, and it had a pantry. It had been a real nice farmhouse at one time.
It was just left vacant at this point, right?
Well, it wasn't, it had been vacant before they moved back out there, because he had built a lovely home, a new home in Texoma. And when that, he built it in 29, 31 when the market broke. Well, he hung on for a year, and then they lost it. Mm-hmm. And so he was at the Dimmitt Ranch for a while, and then he was at the Hook place, living there. And he was farming that land, basically keeping it from, trying to keep from blowing. And the pantry ceiling fell in from dirt. Now this, you got men coming for dinner. And Beulah was a little black-haired, black-eyed lady, and had the biscuits in the oven, and they had a wood or cow chip or whatever you want to call it, stove. Mm-hmm. And they evidently built a house around it because it wouldn't go through any door. It was huge. And so we got aired it out, the house, and got the scoop shovel and got it out of the eating area where they could eat. And then we took a whisk broom and got it off the top of the stove. And the beans were cooking in a Dutch oven, big cast iron thing. There wasn't any sand in that. And we opened the oven and the biscuits were all right.
You had your food.
So, but it took Beulah quite a while to get that
just cleaned up.
Dirt out of the pantry. In the store, we had great long tables the merchandise was displayed on. And we had cloths that we covered it up every night. And if it blew in the day, we didn't even take them off. You know, you knew where your merchandise was, and they would lift it up to get the pants and all, or whatever they were selling.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that sticks in my mind was the Dutch pneumonia, the people that died from it and were sick with it, and the number of kids that died. My mother was a nurse, and they would, if the doctor was out on call, they'd call her to deliver a baby or whatever, and stay with the sick. And I know that, there were several children died of diphtheria. And at one time we had five families living at our house. And why? Spearmint's not in line with anything. I never could figure out why they got stranded in Spearmint going somewhere. But they had, we had five bedrooms in the house, one bathroom, and there was water upstairs where you could draw the water to wash your face and all. And we had mother had built and Lester Howell had built a garage, huge. And one side of it was to be, for your washing and soap making. And she did some things with a lathe, and she had and she also did some pottery with a lathe. And so they had clothesline wire stretched over it like this, and they had gas in it, two burner gas stove, I guess, to heat water for the washing. I had, and she had, you had your chicken battery, the brooder or whatever that you hatched out chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So these people would get stranded, and we had another little old building out there that kind of had a round top, and part of it was chicken house. And she'd start beans cooking and had little round kerosene heaters and take them out there. And I know a family of four was living, had one bed out there, and it had wire springs.
How did you end up with five families at your house?
Well, they weren't, all of them weren't in the house. One of them was in that one little building, and three of them were in this, what had been built for the garage. They'd cartoned off with sheets.
Yeah.
So they'd have a place to sleep. I guess they got stranded there.
Your parents were just nice enough to take them in.
Oh, yeah. Mother, I had a letter. I tried to find it before it came up. When Mother had written my grandmother that if my daddy quit bringing home families and I quit bringing home every stray animal in Spearmint, that we'd do pretty good.
Well, Mrs. Gilmore, does any of that sound familiar to you?
No, not very.
When, did you say 31 was the year when things started to kind of go downhill for you out in Optima? Or?
You mean Hooker? We lived south out of Hooker. We weren't at Optima.
That's right. I got
Optima
confused.
Dam.
I got confused with your story there.
Yeah, the Optima Dam is straight south, really, of where we live. They called it Optima, which has no bearings because originally the dam was supposed to be close to Optima.
Okay.
And it never was put there because people didn't want to have it there.
I always got confused, yeah, with the town, the ding and the wildlife refuge.
You would.
I always got, you know, because when you're driving through, you see all kinds of Optima signs, and I didn't know.
And it has nothing to do with the town of Optima.
No.
But then originally the dam was supposed to be at Optima, but it wasn't. But it's all mushy. Those years of the 30s,
mm-hmm.
I was young enough, didn't make much difference.
Yeah.
And I didn't start, I was 8 years old before I went to school, because we lived about 3 miles from school, and nobody coming by our house that I could go with anybody, which would have meant mother and dad would have had to get me to school going and coming every day.
Yeah.
So they kept me back until they would let my brother come to school. He was about 16 months younger than I was. So he started school a little bit younger than he was supposed to, just to get in, and I was pretty old, you know, by that time. But then I went to that old Neff school. They had a country school, a two-room country school, which was a big school at that time.
Yeah, twice as big as most of them.
Yeah. Bet, too, uh-huh. And that's where I went to public school.
Well, how did you feel starting school at 8 years old? You must have been older than a lot of the...
I was, but that didn't bother me. There were others, you know, in school. After all, four grades were in one room.
Mm-hmm.
So you all felt that you were all about the same age anyway. That was anything that was in one room was about the same age as far
right.
as you were concerned. No, that didn't bother me. I didn't know any better.
But you lived then grew up in a very rural, on a farm in a
very
definitely, rural area.
Oh, definitely. It was country. It was definitely country. The closest neighbor would be, at least we had one neighbor that was about a mile and a quarter, and he had one that was closer, but you'd taking the road made it further away too, but there just was not much going on. Nothing lived south of us except somebody living right on the Beaver River that didn't even come our way. Their road was a different direction. We were the last ones up at the Beaver River where we were.
Did your family use horses or?
Yes, definitely. Right. When we started, that's all that Dad had was horses. And your Lister, one rule Lister. And you had your milk cows, you had your few chickens, you lived on the farm.
What were your chores you remember growing up?
Well, until where we lived, after we'd been there a short time, my mother's parents moved a house close to our house. And I had not started to school yet, as I remember. When Grandpa's harvest time, Grandpa would help with the chores because my dad was in the field all the time. And my brother wasn't old enough to help in the field, neither was I. There were just the two of us, the two kids. So Grandpa would go with me, and we'd ride into the pasture, hunt up where the cows were to bring them home for milking. And my grandpa taught me how to milk. So I got to learn to milk. And besides that, all I had was gather the eggs or things like that. There was not much else. I was more hindrance than a help in the house, you know.
Yeah. You could almost say you learned to milk before you learned to read or write.
Well, I didn't learn to read, but I learned to count, and I learned my ABCs and things before I got to go to school. I did that, so I had a head start for some things.
Do you remember any time on the farm when you realized that things weren't as good as they used to be, like money was a little tighter or?
Well, it was always tight, as far as I was concerned. It was always tight. Dad had bought the place, he had borrowed money to buy the place when we moved out there, and it was always tight. There were times when he thought he wouldn't be able to keep the farm.
Well, she's probably like, I was growing up, there wasn't any, everybody was short of money. There were a few people, you know, like there always is, that had a little more than everybody else, but nobody knew they were poor.
You grew up more in a, not so such a farming area.
Well, my husband raised 4 miles west of Texoma, and he started, Sunnyside School. And he had to start when he was five, because his sister was 5 years older, and she wanted him to go and ride behind her on the horse. So, and it was, you know, all great.
But they at least let him go to school. They wouldn't let my brother go.
But they had, I was at the ranch, and my folks always had rumors, borders, and my Uncle Bernie, well, he really wasn't an uncle, that's what I called him, had lived with us since 29, and he farmed a lot of land, eventually in Texas County. And he farmed during the, all during the Dust Bowl, and he always wore a tie. Couldn't stand that dirt to get down his. And not many people you see driving a tractor wearing a necktie.
No.
Well, when I started, we didn't have anybody close enough, so my brother and I, we had a one-horse buggy.
Yeah.
And we went the 3 miles. Can you imagine? 8-year-olds. And a brother that was just about to be 7, but we had to go to school with that in that buggy. Then the second and third years, when they changed teachers at the school, there were two sisters that taught there. One had the lower room and the other one had the upper room. And they came, stayed with us that winter. And they were there the first, the second and the third year that we went to school. So at least mother and dad had somebody that was in the buggy with us. We still went with that one horse and buggy to school every day. Then after they left, then there was a neighbor girl that was halfway between our place and their place. Our place and the school. So we had to go by her house and pick her up, and she would go with her. That was just 1 year, I guess. And after that, we were older. Had the buggy and the horse long enough, we knew what to do about getting there by that time. We could even take two different ways once in a while.
Just to break the monotony.
Break the monotony, yes.
Did your family get any money for having the teachers stay at your house?
Yes, they, and I, if I remember correct, well, I don't know. I'm afraid to say.
Yeah.
But they paid, yes, they paid for their room and board.
You said your family always had rumors at the house.
Yeah, it was, we had, it's because we had space.
Mm-hmm.
Mother cooked a lot.
Seems like it was a fairly common way to make a little extra money sometimes.
Well, they were.
Well, yes, and then Daddy was always bringing somebody home for supper, and a lot of people made a habit of stopping by at mealtime.
You must have had a good cook in the house.
And I can remember we always had a huge bowl of dried apricots, a bowl of dried prunes, and a bowl usually of peaches or apples. Always. That was standard, like salt and pepper. And now do you know what a bowl of apricots that size would cost?
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I know, went home with somebody one time, and I came back, and I said, they must be in bad shape. All they had was sausage, worst biscuits I ever ate, and white gravy. And it was, it was just floating in grease. And all the fruit they had on was prunes, which I didn't like. So
that was a sign to you that they were in bad shape.
But and salmon, that was very common. Sardines and salmon were
something I wouldn't have guessed that.
Oh yeah, and
well, you had to have something that was that you could get to because you didn't have a refrigerator or anything to keep meat.
Mrs. Gilmore, what was typical food like for you at your house?
In the spring, we ate chicken. And then that was the most part that you would have, and the leftover hams that you'd put up the winter before. You could eat some of the hams. And in the fall, when it got cold enough, we'd butcher one beef. And you'd hang that up on the windmill to keep it cold, you know. It had to be cold before you butchered.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you couldn't keep it any other way, and you ate that for a while. And you butchered a hog during the wintertime, and you get your fresh meat. You'd make your sausages, smoke them, you could keep them a while. Mother got to where she would can sausage, she would.
Did you all ever can beef?
I think she did. I think she canned some beef too.
Well, people would bring in.
She finally ended up getting one of those pressure cookers.
Yeah.
And that's when she started putting up meat. So we'd have a change during the, even she canned, even canned chicken.
And a lot of people would bring us a quarter of beef for a permanent or something, and Mother would can it. I hated it.
They didn't give a quarter of a beef for a permanent, is that what you said?
Yeah. Beauty shop.
Yeah, so they'd trade, swap out food for hair
yeah.
care.
Yeah, and then a lot of, we used to eat cracked wheat for breakfast.
You boil it down to the mud?
Well, it was, Mother made kind of a mock pecan pie. She had soaked the wheat and then put it in like you would pecans in pie, and mm-hmm. it tasted kind of like.
What about mock apple pie on the Ritz cracker box?
Yeah, but you didn't have Ritz crackers except when you had tea or
you saved that for special anyway.
That would be a special treat. What else would be a special treat? Like something you wouldn't get every day but look forward to?
The big thing would be when I was still in elementary school, but if Dad would go to town and he brought back a box of marshmallows, and there were 10 marshmallows in a box. Boy, would I stretch those marshmallows.
Well, Mother made marshmallows.
No, we didn't.
I tried it one time and it was a wreck.
How do you make marshmallows?
Yeah.
They ain't quite in sugar, powdered sugar.
My mom used to, she said that her treat was candy corn. And when her parents would go to town, they'd bring back candy corn. They brought back a bag for all the kids. There was five kids. And she snuck off of that bag and ate all of it and got sick. And never could eat candy corn again.
Oh, no.
Did you ever eat one too many marshmallows?
No, never did. And I still eat marshmallows. My husband doesn't care for marshmallows. He doesn't think that's candy or anything. That just doesn't, just like angel food cake. That's not cake. That doesn't count. But marshmallows, I have most of the time I keep a package, this big package of marshmallows. And I still eat marshmallows. You wouldn't believe the chocolates for you.
What were yours?
Well, and the Cracker Jacks, that was important too, the little box of Cracker Jacks.
We got a prize.
Do you remember, would your parents bring back Cracker Jacks?
Was special. Oh, we didn't go to town unless it was some special reason. Yeah. When you went to town 15 miles at that time, that was all day long.
Yeah.
Besides, what did they want with two kids with them when they go to town like that? They left us with Grandma and Grandpa.
I told my grandmother she had gone out California when the times were real bad. She had a good job out there, and she came to visit us one time. And I told her that Mother was making me eat weeds and that I'd go back to California with her. And it's lamb's quarter.
Now what is that?
It's a weed. It grows up the side of the road, and it's, you pick the leaves, and you don't pick the great big ones. And you wash the little suckers. And I got in on washing and picking the little. And Doc, that it grows up, has a wide leaf. And I kind of like it.
What, it's called Doc?
Doc. D-O-C-K, I guess. And there were several plants you ate. Daddy, as a kid in Tennessee, they always had, it's kind of peppery tasting, comes out early in the spring on the, like that they, you know, they felt like you needed fresh green stuff. Mm-hmm. But I always looked forward to when they had the first fryers and first corn on the cob.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you were lucky, they had, you'd have strawberry shortcake. for some event.
Yeah.
And they'd have all the politicians talk, and they'd come to NTN, that's kind of next to nature. It was a, oh, kind of a park, had a fishing hole and all that. And they'd have a horse tank and cakes of ice in it and watermelons, and they'd, you know, do what politicians do, do their talking. And if you listened to them, you ate their watermelon, you know. And they always had huge watermelons. You don't even see them like that anymore.
They'd lure you in with the watermelons.
Well, they'd just serve them. That was kind of like to get people to attend, and mm-hmm. everybody would bring picnic lunch, and we used to go down there and sing fish and have fish fries down there. And of course, when times really got bad, what little money the men had, they'd go to the Rattlesnake End out near the Holt community in the breaks near Pringle, not too far from Adobe Walls.
Rattlesnake Inn
mm-hmm.
community?
It's where you get your bootleg whiskey.
Oh, all right.
And they had a slot machine in there. And they sold it in half-gallon jars. It was real good quality. They never did have anybody come up with jackleg or anything like that, like some of the... And the Revenders never did. They practically lived out. They never did find the still. And out on our place, West Texoma, there was an old still and copper tubing.
Huh.
And I was going to go down and get it in the dugout, but there was several rattlesnakes down there. And I put it off. I was going to do it in the winter when they weren't so active, and the thing caved in. So,
Did you ever have any experience with bootleg whiskey?
No, not with whiskey. I was already, I don't know if I was out of high school or not, but we found a swimming hole one time after the water had been high along the Beaver River. My brother and I and another friend, and friends of ours, they had a girl and a boy about our age, and we went to this hole for swimming, and we scattered around just doing the, that was close to the Beaver River. It was, I don't even know where it was. I know it was west and toward the river. We found an old dugout. And there had been one there, we could tell. At least we were old enough to know what it was. But they never did encounter anything with
it. So they would use old dugouts to hide there.
Where something that wasn't, wouldn't call the attention of anybody. And if you had these big pastures, you didn't have people.
People lived in them, too.
Yeah.
And then people still have them. When we got older, we called them security holes.
We lived in a dugout for about a year when we moved on one of the places where we lived. After we'd been living, when I was born, we were living in a house, but we moved to another place, lived in a dugout before the house
was ready. They were cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter than the houses were.
I don't remember, that's too long ago. That was before I was... I was 4 years old before we moved to the farm where I grew up.
As young children growing up, what would you do, or even as teenagers, and what would you do for entertainment on your...
You didn't say, I don't have anything to do or I'm bored, because there was always wash.
That doesn't sound very entertaining.
Baseboards. You dusted baseboards. Then you took a little brush and you oiled the furniture. They always found something.
Yeah.
Well, living on the farm, there was always something to do, regardless. Mm-hmm. It was my job, besides the helping my, when we were older, my brother and I did the milking. My dad had arthritis so bad he couldn't milk. So it was our job to milk, and it was my job to keep the coal bucket full, keep my job to collect the kindling for the next morning, and see that the lamps were filled and the chimneys washed. That was enough when you went to school, too.
Well, we had hands at the ranch, and we, at harvest time, my uncle took me up. He had a lady there, but she was slow getting around. I was 11 when I was cooking for harvest hands.
So you didn't have time for any fooling around, any fun?
Oh, you could think of a lot of trouble to get into.
You kind of look like a troublemaker.
Oh, no, I'm shy and reserved.
Well, we lived far enough away, I didn't have any chance to get mixed up with very much. Girls didn't go.
Did you have any friends that you had?
Wintercrest is what I was trying to think of.
We lived way far enough away, you didn't walk down.
That was in Tennessee.
Now, my mother talked about walking to places, you know, as much as 3 and 5 miles away. I never did.
Yeah.
And in fact, there wasn't anybody, we had one neighbor that we probably would go to sometime, maybe once during the summer, we'd go play with those kids that were a little over a mile away. Well, we'd walk down there. Anytime we went, you'd walk, but then I didn't walk that much because most of the time we just were at home.
So you just,
now, my brother, when he was older, he'd, of course, get on the horse and go places, but girls didn't.
You were lucky if Jody and I wanted to go to town. They lived a little more. 2 miles out in the country, and Red says, you know where it's at, don't you?
2 miles out in the country where we live, 50 now.
If we wanted to go somewhere, it was, you know, 3-4 miles.
Oh, yeah, you could go, sure. But no, we didn't have that opportunity.
I've gotten in more trouble, Jody and I. We always played with guns, but we never did get in trouble.
Who is this, Jody or Jody?
Jody. J-O-E and then capital D.
And that was your
cousin.
Right.
He's 3 years younger now.
Is he in trouble?
But we got in trouble riding horses we weren't supposed to. Or doing something on a horse we weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
But we never did get in trouble with, pretty well taught that if you, even if a gun was empty or you thought it was empty, you didn't point it at anybody.
Right.
You might wind up in the tea kettle. And my uncle didn't discriminate. If a bunch of kids did something they weren't supposed to, I don't care whether it's his kid or the neighbor's, you all got a whipping. Every one of you with a belt.
Yeah. You remember being taken out to the woodshed ever?
We didn't have a woodshed, but I got taken care of.
What did you do?
Yeah. Probably sassing back or something. I don't know that.
Oh, if you'd sass somebody, well, that wasn't it. You'd get blistered.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I don't remember anybody that didn't get to make a trip occasionally to the proverbial woodshed, so to speak.
Right.
You know.
Sure.
And some more than others. We didn't have anybody telling us we were abused either.
Yeah. Well, how would you say that the dust storms in the 30s and the depression changed your life at all from the way it was? Did you notice any difference at all when winds picked up and things started moving around?
Oh, yeah. It was. It got so old. It's, you know, that continual blowing in the dirt. And we had, my daddy had a lady friend, and they came down to Spearman for probably before Easter. It was in April, and you read all about it. 34, I think it was 35.
35, yeah.
And it rolled in, and you could see the glow of the light bulb, but you couldn't see anybody in the room. I mean, that's how thick the dust was. And you tied wet rags around your face to breathe.
You remember that, the Black Sunday experience?
That was the time it had blown all week long. Now, I was, that was in 35, I was already in high school.
Yeah.
And it had blown all week long. You didn't clean house. You just brushed it aside to go to bed. In the kitchen, you kept the worst of it out of the way. But Sunday morning you woke up, it was clear as a bell. You didn't know it had ever blown. So you started out. The whole house from one end to the other. And that was my job. We didn't even go to church that Sunday. And shortly after noon, we had the house cleaned up. Everything had been brushed off the windowsills, and you shook whatever. All the beds have been cleared and you got the floor scrubbed. And at 4 o'clock you saw this blue oil coming. And we knew what it was because we'd seen them before. My brother had gone to Adams in the car to see some of his buddies, and they had seen it in time, I guess, before we did at home. But here he came, he driving as fast as he dared, barely made the car into the garage.
Well, it caused static electricity that would affect the cars. Mm-hmm.
That because at the same time, just as we were all standing on the front porch watching that coming in, and when it was just as close as we wanted to have it, why, we walked inside and shut the door. And just as we stood there in the door and looked through that door, here was a man's face. And it was some kid we knew. He had come from the other direction. He said his car stopped and he started running. He ran as hard as he could. He aimed at our house and he made it just when it hit. They both got there at the same time.
How lucky.
And you carried an old canvas water jug hanging on your bumper. You know, the bumpers had two deals.
Yeah.
And you carried one or two with you in case you needed it for your car or to drink, or if you got caught in a dust storm, you're always supposed to have a bunch of rags with you. Pour some of this water inside your Model A and keep tied around your face.
And that's one sign. I don't think we ever did use any wet legs. I don't remember ever using them.
Well, my uncle had been to Spearman and started back to Texoma, and he had Jody with him. And he had water jugs on the front, you know, they were burlap and had a cork.
Yep.
And rope. Mother sent some rags along and some fruit jar drinking water or something and a couple of sandwiches in case they had car trouble or something. Because there wasn't any, you know, filling stations from Pyramid to Texoma. What kind of road was kind of pasture type road, really. So Duster rolled up and he used, had to tie those clothes.
It was a good thing he had that water with him.
Did you ever put brown tape on around the windows, all the cracks in them?
We didn't have any tape. That's where the rags went. Mother would stuff and then take something and stuff it wherever there was a little.
Behind the, you know, the trim.
Mm-hmm.
And then where the window was, he put this brown tape.
Huh.
Well, the wind, you know, that tape would dry out and come loose and they'd go, woo, woo. Talk about waking you up, making your hair stand on end. But it'd make most horrible sounds, like somebody moaning or something.
Did you ever get scared during the dusters at all?
Not especially.
Yeah.
I just didn't like them. I knew what they were.
You were a little older than her. She was.
Yeah.
She was scared. I mean, you were young. I mean, it would have been scary to anybody, I think.
Well,
I remember. But I remember one, and I think I had just started to elementary school. That wasn't when the Dust Bowl years, but we had one that came in that one Saturday, and I had pink eye. And that was one of the reasons I wouldn't have gotten to go along with Mother and Dad to town. But Leona and I were at home and with my pink eye. And we hadn't even noticed that something was rolling in. And I don't know whether Leona was outside, you know, and noticed it and told me, or whether I just accidentally happened to look out, or whether things were getting dark. But we took out to Grandma's, who was maybe as far as from here to the end of this block down here from our house. And it was pitch dark like that. And Mother and Dad were in Hooker. And they didn't get home until late that evening because it was so black they couldn't see to drive home. But that was not the kind from the Dust Bowl years. It was just one of those things that rolled in at that time. And
well, didn't really scare me. It'd wake me up.
Yeah.
But after Mother died, I had my uncle had this German Shepherd, whose grandson, Rin Tin Tin, registered dog. and they'd had it in North Chicago. And they said they moved in to take care of me.
This is your uncle?
Yes, it was my uncle's dog, Uncle Rupert. He was a retired Navy man. He'd been with the police department in North Chicago. And things were getting pretty exciting up there, and he couldn't be bought off, so the mayor of North Chicago was a friend of his. And he said he was afraid of things that were taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And that if he could come out this country to come on, he came in 29, which was a good year. You know, the stock market hadn't broke yet, and he was going to go into farming, so they were out on a farm not making anything, and he had a retirement, and so they moved in. It was my aunt, my daddy's sister, who took care of him. So I'd open the window and let him out if he wanted out. That was the deal. He could sleep with me if I'd let him out if he needed out.
And grandson of Ren Tin Tin. This must have been a pretty popular dog.
Well, he cost $75 back in about 1927, which was quite a lot of money.
It's not a small amount right now.
Poor dog.
Right.
So I'd let him in. I'd just keep the screen unlatched, and I'd raise the window and push the screen out, and he'd come back in. So if I had him in there, I wasn't scared. You know, it didn't bother me.
That brings up a good point. Do you remember any pets you had that...
Oh, yes, we always had... They weren't house pets. None of them were house pets, but we always had cats and dogs. And we had a lot of coyotes. See, it's open country. Nobody lived south of us, so it was pretty open there, and plenty of coyotes. So Dad always kept some hounds, what you call hounds.
Right.
They're pretty tall. Dogs kept those around, especially to keep the coyotes away, because sometimes at 5 o'clock you'd see a coyote coming to the chicken house.
Ready for dinner.
Got hungry.
Yeah.
So, and then we'd have little ones that we could play with, cats and dogs.
My mother raised canaries. She had canaries before she passed away, and she had a beauty shop. I learned to count 300 before I started school. That's how many quarts of green beans you count.
Your mother had a beauty shop and raised canaries.
And we had goldfish in a little half barrel out in the yard. And I had a registered white Persian cat. It wasn't one of these flat faced like they are now,
right.
But she had blue eyes. And mother used to use bluing on these ladies with white hair.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't have good detergent shampoo back then. You had coconut oil or something, and it was real hard to get out and make her hair feel real good. And she used vinegar and lemon rinses, and she'd use a little bluing in the last rinse water on those people's real white hair. So I washed my cat, and I got a little too much bluing in the water.
I bet your cat didn't like that very much anyway.
And there was more people coming by the beauty shop to see Ann's blue cat. And they thought it took it for a long time for that to wear off.
Several baths.
Yeah, several. Wait for all that hair to grow out or something.
We had a canary bird too for quite a few years, and kept him in the. Of course, our house, we didn't have lots of rooms. We kept that one in the living room at the west window, and the door we used practically all the time was going out of the kitchen. Well, you couldn't see the kitchen door from the living room. So when we would have been gone several hours, and as soon as we opened the door, that canary would call. He had a special call. And we'd say, "Well, we're home, Dickie." And he'd shut up. You know, that had company now. And we had them until Mother and Dad moved to town, which was about 38 or something like that. And that was when they had first got gas into town. Maybe they were using oil stove. No, it was the gas, I guess, by that time, because the gas fumes in the house were too much for that bird. And it didn't dawn on them that could happen to that canary that couldn't stand those gas fumes.
Hmm.
Because your burners were open.
Yeah.
And evidently that's what got in.
Hmm.
Never
had. Somebody gave my mother, you know, a lot of people in town had milk cows.
Yeah.
And somebody gave my mother a mule, and he limped, and they called him Wimpy. And Mr. Whitson's people that had lived on farm and farmed his place had up moved somewhere. And he had a great big garden that was fenced with wood and watered from the windmill. So Mother would take Wimpy out and do, I think Ted, my husband, called it sled, kind of like it. And I'd sit on it and she'd go up down the rows. And she raised an awful lot of stuff there, and we canned a lot of stuff.
300, at least 300 jars of green beans.
And she had, I had canned beef, but Daddy would, because I didn't like it, he'd bring me fresh meat from butcher shop.
A little treat. You mentioned that you got, your parents moved to town in 41 or
30? No, that's, must have been about 38, because my brother got married and he moved on the farm. So Mother and Dad moved into town. And then when my brother went into the service, they moved back to the farm until he came home from the army. And then they moved back to town again, and then they never moved back to the country after that. And my brother then lived on the farm until he died, which was in 85. He died in 85. And my sister-in-law stayed there even after he died, which was about a year and a half. She moved into Guymon. She was in Guymon only about 4 months when she died.
How old were you when you moved out on your own, away from your parents?
Well, I came here to Goodwill in the summer, in about August of 36. That was the year I graduated from high school. And I wanted to come to college, but I didn't get a job at that time, even unless you had something. Nobody had enough money to. There was just one girl that I know of in our dormitory that did not have a job, and she felt out of place because everybody had to work. And I got a job to get my room and board, $18.50 for a month room and board.
That's a good deal.
But then that's not when I started to school. When I came in 37, since I didn't get a job at school, the Morrisons came, and he was the president. They came out, they were looking for somebody, for a girl to come and stay at their house because they had a little boy that was he must have been about 2 and a half. And they went back and forth to Oklahoma City quite a bit, and sometimes just had to go someplace, and they couldn't take him all the time. They wanted somebody in the house that would stay with the little boy and just do housework. That was my first job. And I stayed there until a whole year, from August to August. And then I got a job so I could come to college. And I moved into the dormitory. And I had a job every year while I was going to school for my room and board. The last 2 years, it didn't cover my room and board, but by that time, Dad could afford a little extra money, you know, so he could pay the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I graduated from college, I had a full-time job.
What did you study in school? What was your...
I have a degree in home ec and a teaching certificate in home ec and to teach English, and never did. And I had a full-time job. I had got a job in the business office working full-time. I was waiting for, because that's where I had been working as a student, full-time. That was my school job. And then I had this job that whenever I graduated, I could work full-time, because the girl that was doing the secretarial work was getting married, so I got to replace her, and that was when Marvin McKee was in the business office, and it was the president was still here as a president, and he had his office, so I probably had some pull, I don't know. But anyway, I'd worked there as a student for 3 years in the business office. So we asked if I'd... So I never used my...
Did you live in town? I mean, how did you end up back on the farm again?
I didn't.
You stayed?
I'm still here.
Still working in the business college?
No.
Oh, okay.
I worked 9 years in the business office, and then I moved the... Mr. McKee, who was my boss in the business office, had already moved to the president's office. So in 1950, I moved in as his secretary in the president's office. And I stayed there until I quit working, which was in 74.
Wow. What about you and your first paying job?
Well, my first paying job, I got 10 cents an hour, and I worked, I was 10 years old, and I worked for Mr. Smith and his variety store in Spearman. It was before Christmas, and I'd go after school, and you'd have to write down when you got there. And he took out Social Security, too.
Oh, out of that 10 cents an hour.
So, on Saturdays, you know, they didn't close in the afternoons early like they do now. They stayed open late. But basically, I'd wait on somebody occasionally, but I would put the tricycles and wagons together because I could do it better than the women could that he hired. And then about right before Christmas, we had everything together. But that was the first job. Then I worked at the hardware during the war in a parts department for International Harvard, and for Walt Wilmoth in Spearman. He owned the hardware.
Who was his name?
Walter Wilmoth, and he was a rancher there, and he owned the hardware, and he owned International Harvester. And it was a big building down on the corner. And I'd come back and stay with my aunt and uncle at the store. They ran the store. I sold them the merchandise and bought the building. And I worked in the store on a commission from the time I was eight. And I did pretty good 1 year, so my father docked me. A bunch of the cowhands came in and they'd had a pretty good sale. And so I was going to make about $10 that week.
Oh my, I made $2 a week when I was working at the president's office. At the president's house. I stayed with them that year, and I got $2 a week.
Well,
I was making money.
Yeah.
Well, that's the reason I got mine docked, is because...
Yeah, what did you say, a bunch of what came in?
Cowhands from the ranch, LX.
Yeah.
And...
they bought a bunch of stuff, or...?
Oh, yeah. They would buy... Well, we used to handle... hats that would sell for $100, not during the Depression, mind you, but in the 40s. And then we had those Western suits that were Pendleton wool shirts. And it was just, they hadn't gotten to town in quite a while, and we handled Lee's, Levi's, and then later on, Wranglers. And work clothes, we handled Poole and Dickey work clothes. And they were put on table stacks, 30s, and then you look for the leans.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to cut them off and hem them if they were too long, you know.
So these cowhands came in with money to spend, and you were there making your commission?
Yeah, I was there waiting on them. And some of them bought some boots. We sold Justin boots and Florsham shoes. And some of them bought some boots, and some of them hadn't drawn their paychecks up for some time. So anyway, it was my father decided that was an excessive salary for his daughter.
You would have gotten into more trouble with that.
So anyway, we didn't go on the commission anymore. But I think 39 is the year that stands out in my mind is the year that things turned around.
Started to pick up a little bit?
Well, it started to pick up, and we started getting rain. And
you remember the first big rainstorm?
Well, we had rains back during the dirty 30s, but they did come, you know, just bang, and what little you got wouldn't do any good because it came so quick, and then spearmen have puddles, and it wanted to dry up the curl up the mud in it, and it's fun to be barefoot and get up there and walk in that.
Do you remember the first rain after a long drought? How the reaction of the town? Or?
No, I really don't. I really.
In 41, we had snowstorms.
The main, yeah, there were in the 40s that we had snowstorms, and didn't see the ground for weeks at a time, right here. And I remember I was going to Saturday morning, I worked on Saturday mornings too. Got to the front door and I saw what we had. I didn't know that it had snowed at night. Snowed at night. And there were drifts between the dormitory where I lived and where I went to work. I went back in and put on my snow boots, but that wasn't enough. I had to straddle drifts going to the business office. And I'd sometimes sink down, clear down as far as I could slip down. Could just barely tell the angle from the street lights, you know, where I was supposed to go. The blizzard we had that night. But that was already in 40 or 41. I don't remember which one it was.
Great wheat crop.
But I remember an ice storm that we had before that time. And that's really the first thing I really remember that it was wet. But we had an ice storm here in town, and people who had their cars parked along the street there at school couldn't move them because the tree branches were on top of them, you know, hanging down on it. And at that time, there was not where we live now, that was all open. There was no housing. There was no gym. There was nothing there on that side. That president's house was the only thing on that block there. And on this side, there was nothing. Well, the block that's across from the president's house, there was nothing there. When I came here that for that year, there was nothing there. That was all still open. Nothing had been built there. So they used that bare area, and there were just hills of tree limbs that they had piled up. And that's the first thing I remember of it really being.
Did you ever go swimming at the duck pond?
Not often.
Well, they had a pond, had dirt banks, and they used it for irrigation. And you'd walk out to the college farm and swim in it. Wasn't too clean at times, and that's the reason they called it the duck pond.
Yeah.
Wasn't built there for swimming either.
Well, besides the weather turning around, what else, what other signs of good times do you remember? Like, you know, thinking we're turning around, we're coming down. What were things that made?
Well, you could even go to from here to Guyman. Kids didn't have, when I was going to school, there weren't cars. There were very few kids that had a car. Well, they'd double up sometime. They would take you, and sometimes even some of the teachers would, if they had a card. Not even all the teachers had cards. You'd get to go to Guymon. But you didn't have money to spend. You just went.
Milton and Orley England, he came back to teach, and they'd sponsor a trip to Guymon. They'd get the old bus, and it was pretty bad. I remember even thinking it was bad back then. Take everybody to the show. It cost 50 cents. You had to pay your way to the show, and then so much of that went for the gas. And since they had to have adults along, well, usually Mr. Funk would always invite them in because Orley said they was too broke to spend money on a show. But Milton was teaching here. That's for sure.
Yeah, I know them. Yeah, they were real good friends.
So what was the that was a sign to you that things were getting better? It was going being able to go to Guymon, or?
Well, you got out of town.
Yeah.
Of course, I didn't have any money, and I didn't go to Guymon very often either.
What did you do once you were there?
Well, you didn't stay very long. You just went around looking at what was in town.
Just kind of.
Because I didn't.
Well, see, they used to have sewing rooms. it was kind of like the ladies got so much pay, and they'd make shirts.
That
and
was
dresses.
The NYA, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then they even had the sewing room afterwards for the starving Armenians and the Appalachians and, you know, kids that needed clothing.
Mm-hmm.
They used that as an excuse to get it under another policy.
And then they would pay the sewers.
The ladies, uh-huh.
You said your dad was the NRA
administrator.
Administrator. So I'm guessing your family was on the Roosevelt side of things.
Well, mother always had something going. She could do everything, build onto a house, or she'd build a garage, or fix a car, you know.
Was that after you moved to Texoma, or was that while you were still in Texas?
Well, I can remember the ladies at the sewing room at Texoma because they'd get the material and you'd use a whole bowl because you could cut more shirts out. And then and they were down in a vacant building there on what's really Main Street of Texoma, runs east and west. And the street that had all the buildings on it when I was going was Second Street. Hmm. So
I didn't know about that.
But they had it for other occasions. And then they came in when I was going to college at Chickasha. They had Red Cross came in, you know, right after the war started, and this lady was wanting everybody to knit a sweater. And she said, so many stitches. You know, there was a small size, a medium size, a large size. And she said, so many stitches. You know, and then you go from there. Well, if she'd said so many inches, we'd been better off. There's a giant roaming around in Europe with my sweater on, probably today. The sleeves were this long, and it's about this big around. Sweater came to my feet, and I made it just exactly, but she knitted so tight it was kind of stiff.
Oh, yeah.
And we knit one of the scarves that they would put over their head, and they'd cross it and back here and then bring it around if it was long enough. Mine was long enough. So but I can remember going over and taking thread or something to them. And on the Texas side in Texoma, Ms. Ingham and the Dimmitts, John Dimmitt lived there, and the older Mrs. Roach, and occasionally they'd need thread or something, and it's a good mile, or half mile anyway. He made me a little delivery boy.
Mrs. Gilmore, do you remember any New Deal programs going on in New Well? Are you a pro-Roosevelt Democrat or a staunch Republican?
I'm a Republican now, but I never didn't get registered until I was in college.
Yeah, so the New Deal didn't really
No, living out in the country, you didn't get mixed up with a lot of things that people lived who were in town and were mixed up with it, you know.
Did your father ever take advantage of some of the programs offered by
No.
the...
No, never did. He didn't think it was right. As long as you could get by and had something to eat, he didn't even think it was right to go with the WPA. He thought that was to be left to people who just didn't have anything.
Yeah.
He just didn't believe in it.
Well, it sounds like you were able to get by all right.
Well, I learned to save.
Yeah? That was just something you brought out of the experience?
That's it. Like I say, we never did know that there was extra money. There never was any extra money. Now, there was that one time, you know, when they had that big wheat crop. And Dad wanted to pay off on his land, and they didn't want to take it because they'd rather have it interest stretched out so they could collect for more years, you know. Well, right then it was all right, so we got a new car that they put together. It came in parts that came to Hooker, and they put it together, and he drove out one day with the new car.
That's what he did with the extra...
That he had some extra money that he could do, you know. He was going to pay off the land, but they didn't want it then. We hadn't had a car. We were still driving one of these. Well, I don't know how to explain. You probably haven't even seen pictures of it. Fords is all we had. The first one that I remember was one of those curtained... Touring cars.
Model T or...?
Yes, Model T. And we drove that for years and years. Way out, you know, you needed transportation just to go to town to begin with. And then we had this little sedan. It had two doors, and the doors were in the middle on both sides. I don't know how Dad got in on his side. I don't even remember, but I know the door on this side, Mother's front passenger seat folded up, so the four of us could get into the back. Grandma and Grandpa and my brother and I would be in the back seat to go to church. Dad would have his side, and Mother would have that seat that you folded back to get in. And that's what we had until we got that green. And that was about 29 when we got that car. And I don't know, that car lasted a long time before you had money again where you could
another
car.
Well, what other luxuries do you remember getting? Do you remember your first time you had electricity?
Well, we had electricity in Spearman, but when we built our house at West of Texoma, we used a generator for the power tools, and we had it wired for what was coming down the road. But they did get it wired. I mean, we did get it just before we moved in. We started the house in 49 and finished it in 51. But politics, Daddy and Mother had to go see my first grade teacher. They came around, did a church survey. And they had the girls, like sixth and seventh graders, doing them. She asked what denomination, and she couldn't hardly figure out the word.
Yeah.
And I said, well, sometimes Democrat and sometimes Republican. And my first grade teacher was a big buxom woman that wore these kind of glasses, you know, that had the little. And she sent a note to my parents that I was too involved in politics. But we discussed politics from the time I got up till we went to bed. And my granddad Dodson, I just remember one time he was big, tall, 6'5", and he was postmaster, and then his son was postmaster, and that was when they were, according to your affiliation, when they changed political parties, you changed postmasters.
Right.
So he was Republican, and my mother was Democrat. So they, and love, both of them loved to argue. And I can just remember, I was 3 years old, and I remember reaching down and tousing my head, and he and mother pointing at each other.
Arguing away.
That's all I remember. But it was, and my uncle, of course, he was been all over the world while he was in the Navy, so he knew the politics and the situations. And he said, something broke out, and he said they ought to get a bunch of the Jews and the Kurds and pay them and send them in, and said they're the toughest people on earth. They can, and the fightingest people, they can solve it. And
you had some political debates going on at your house. Mrs. Gilmore, do you remember when you first got electricity, and or was it when you came to school here?
I was already away from home when they got electricity there, because when the electricity first came out from that direction into the country, they put it on the west end of our section, but it was too far away, they wouldn't let us have any of it. Too much, it was too much line, it cost too much. So our farm did not get electricity until after World War II, when they brought it in from a different direction.
1945 or later?
It was about 19... They got it, I think, even Mother and Dad had moved back to town already. My brother was, when he first lived there, they still didn't have the electricity, as I remember, when he moved out there before he got married. There wasn't any electricity. They had to wait until, it had to be about 41, somewhere around 41, 42, I think. I don't really remember because I wasn't there.
Right.
They did hookers.
Well, that's when the line on the west side came going to Hooker. That's when Hooker got there.
Well, that was in 47 or 8.
Well, that this.
Well, I mean, when they signed everybody up in Texas and Oklahoma, and they came out. And they said that Hooker was better populated. They were going to do east of Texas County first before they did the west part. And we got ours out of Rita Blanca because we lived in Texas before they got the lines into the people across the road.
It'd be hard to see people across the road having electricity and
We didn't see them.
Yeah.
Of course, like I say, you know, we were rather isolated living out in the country.
What about running water?
That's one thing that other people might not have. We had a windmill, and it had an elevated barrel that collected water. And summertime, we had water running in the house. Wintertime, we carried our water because it was always frozen up.
Yeah.
But we had this big range that had one of these deals on the side, these water deals, and that was my job to keep that filled up. We had warm water there.
To wash?
No, not to wash, because when it was wash day, that was done outside. We had one of these, what do you call them?
Kettles.
Kettles outside. We had a wash house, which was also a one-car garage. and it has a big kettle, and that's where the washing was done. That's where Mother heated up the water in one of those big kettles, and she had washing machine. She even had a washing machine for a while. A double deal, whatever you call it, was round, made out of wood, mind you, two of them. And we had an engine there that summertime, if the wind didn't bring us enough water, we had to pump water for the cattle. We had to keep, because my dad ran cattle. It was mostly pasture. There wasn't much.
You had a pump jack? What they call a pump jack?
No, this was one that had a lot of pulleys and it ran through the washhouse and tied to the pump out there and then pumped it up and down. And this same engine would be belted to this washing machine at one end, which would turn the washer.
A dasher.
Okay. And it didn't do good enough job. You washed in this, and then you took the wringer and ran him into this tub to wash him some more. Then you had another wringer and you got them into the rinse water.
The automatic washer.
Your automatic washer.
I think you get to hand wash them after that.
That's right. And then you did all the starching and things before.
The wash day sounds like a mess.
It was a mess.
They had these big old black kettles. And Mother made soap. They'd bring her fresh pour because Mother made white lard. Mm-hmm. And the ladies liked it for baking. So the men would bring the fresh pour. So Mother would make the lard, so they'd have the white lard for their baking. And I wasn't allowed around that operation. I suppose because how they did it was a lie.
Yeah.
I don't know. But somebody gave us a turkey one year and they waited. Gave it to us probably for a permanent or maybe two permanents. And he weighed 45 pounds. He was old enough to vote, no doubt. And Mother had him in the parboiling all day long in this kettle out back. And then there wasn't an oven in the country you could get him in, but the kid that worked at the bakery, he roomed and boarded at our house or came up and stayed at different times with another kid that was staying there. So Mother made a deal with him, and he put it on the bread racks, and it baked it all night, and she took the broth and stuff and whatever and made the dressing. And people then, the clerks in your store, they didn't go anywhere for Thanksgiving, you know, because they didn't have transportation. Spearman didn't have a bus anywhere unless you wanted to go to Shattuck on that doodle bug or something. Well, you stayed put. And there were country kids that lived with people in town, and sometimes if the weather was bad, they couldn't even get, you know, back to their folks couldn't get in to get them for Thanksgiving. So we always had all the bachelors and old maids eating Thanksgiving dinner.
Go back to that turkey. Is that turkey any good?
Yeah. I guess it was. There wasn't any of it left. You know, of course, they didn't have these sudden. The turkeys you got had pretty good age on them anyway. Mm. You know, if gobblers.
Did you save the juice for soup?
What?
Did you save the juice for soup? You cooked it in?
Oh, well, I don't know what one was that kettle. But when, after my mother died, there wasn't any goldfish, there wasn't any birds. And she also painted all pictures and sold them at the Fox Drug in Borger during the Depression. And we'd go over there, and that's when Borger was, you don't stay in Borger past sundown, because it was so wild. You know, that was the saying back then. And it was pretty wild. But velvet pictures were what they wanted to paint to sell. And they had this moonlight and red sails and the sunset. And
all the good stuff.
People had and wanted, and that's what she painted. And
your mom sounds like quite a woman.
She was.
Quite an enterprising person.
And somebody said, well, do you work like your mother used to? And I said, no.
Well, if you think back to the 30s, when I think it was a pretty monumental time in American history, you know, I mean, we had the Depression, and out here we had the Dust Bowl. What in your mind stands out as the strongest memory from that period, or something that to you kind of symbolizes that period, or an experience you've had that always comes clear?
See, I didn't really know very much time before the Dust Bowls hit, mm-hmm. that I kind of thought it was the way it was supposed to be. I mean, people complaining about it.
Yeah.
And as the thing that sticks with me is the illnesses, and a lot of people had TB, and they didn't ask you if you wanted to go, or if you were a wife and had a bunch of little kids, they just shipped you to Colorado.
Huh. Did you lose any family members or close friends to dust pneumonia?
My mother was in the hospital with pneumonia twice, and I don't know whether it's dust pneumonia or not, but I had a friend, she was older than I was, she used to pull me around the my wagon, and when her mother would get her hair done, and she got sick, and I think it was with measles or something, but then she took dust pneumonia, or what that said was dust pneumonia,
yeah.
And she died, and and there was kids, some of them were scalded. He was. And my Uncle Vernie's brother lost two children. He idolized his children. And one of them drowned. And she was hanging out close, and he down in the big horse tank while he's. Mother was hanging out clothes, and Tom came to the house, and he saw him floating. And then he lost another one, and I don't remember what he. And they'd say, talk about losing children, you know, and I'd think, how can you lose a kid? You know, I didn't. Then instead of saying they died.
So, in your mind, it's the death of people you knew and relatives that comes to mind more clearly than anything else during that period?
Well, I think what comes to mind is seeing the advancement of cell phone, the drugs and the availability of them. And
are you thinking about your most
well, she had, really, I, that does not ring a bell at all. I don't remember hearing of anybody that died during that time as a result of the dust.
Well, what about what you remember? When you think of your 30s, and you know, you would have been here at this time, at that time, right? What?
The upper 30s, I was here. The rest of them, I was still at home.
Yeah. Is there something in particular during that time?
No,
that,
except just the dirt blowing all the time.
Just the
dirt blowing all the time.
Well, that's a pretty big thing.
I think probably the camaraderie of people. You always took your extra green beans or cans, and it might not be turkey. You might have two fat hens to take some family that was really bad off.
Yeah.
And try to provide for them. I think that's I don't think anybody really. They might not have got all the food they want to get, but I think, you know, they a lot of people in East Bremen, they'd go to the neighbors and get their water from the yard faucet. They didn't have water in a lot of houses.
Yeah. And do you remember that kind of neighbors?
Well, no, that living out in the country, you were not conscious of something like that, because everybody had his own windmill.
Yeah.
And you never were without everything. You always had something to eat. And I don't know if people, there were a lot of people that I knew who took off for California, from a lot of other places.
You had
had relatives that left. Some came back and some didn't.
Did you stay in touch with the people that moved out there?
The relatives we did, but then not other people.
Yeah.
And some of them, they found out it was just as bad there or worse than it was here.
Right.
And we probably would have been the same way, except here Dad had bought this land. He couldn't just up and leave. He didn't have money to get us anywhere.
You know the Costners, he's a movie actor.
Kevin? Mm-hmm.
His parents went to California, and they came back a while and were at Boy City. But they came from Texas County.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And they were...
And they were here in Guymon when he went back to California, weren't they?
And then they worked at Boy City some, and then they went back to California. So, and I think...
There's still some Costners in Guymon, aren't there?
Yeah, they're kin to, they're all kin to each other. But his parents were born and raised in Texas County.
Well, just like, going back to our farm, you know, when Dad wanted to pay off that, and they didn't want it. Then when the years got so hard, so bad, and he didn't have the money, and he didn't even have enough to make the extra payment. And he said he went to town expecting to give it back to them, tell them, don't have it, it's yours. And they said, well, we have too many of those. If you can pay the interest on your loan, we'd rather you'd keep it.
Hmm.
Because he couldn't make a payment, but he could pay the interest.
Yeah.
Because we were milking cows. That's what we lived on. We were milking cows. My brother and I milked as many as 13 cows before we went to school. And after.
You shipped cream?
And shipped cream. And we had, Mother had raised chickens, but we didn't have any grain. And the grain cost more than what you could get for eggs. So that eliminated the chickens. So we lived on cream money until things got better, until he had crops again that he could do something about. He finally got that farm paid off.
And saw it through.
And it was there until my sister-in-law sold it in the, well, what was it, 89, I think. No, yeah. It had to be 88 or 89, because she died, I think, in January of 89. And she had just moved off the farm for 4 months when she died.
And then, because your brother lived on it, right? With your brother and sister-in-law.
Uh-huh. And my brother died in 85.
Huh.
So.
What a great story.
So my dad had got his farm paid off, and he didn't get to go to California when everybody else went.
You know, that's the reason a lot of people stayed, was because they said, we got too many of them stay, and you can farm the next one, you know, that neighbor's land, keep it from blowing it. Yeah. They had home demonstration agents that came and showed women how to can stuff. And you used the cans if they didn't have jars. You saved your can that your tomatoes or what came out of, and then put the lid on. Well, our house had a big living room, and they always came there to demonstrate. Well, all we had extra at the time the lady came was okra. Well, she canned okra. And that summer, I guess later that summer, the next summer, Mother kept the dugout whitewashed and all this stuff. And I heard something going boom, boom. And it set off a chain reaction. All that canned okra blew up. And you talk about a mess. Oh, it was a slick, slimy mess. But they had a lot of good ideas, a lot of people you know didn't know. But when we had chickens and extra ones, sometimes if we really had a bunch of extra ones, I'd take a paper sack, there'd be a dozen or two, and I'd take them to town and sell them at the grocery store. And I always bought a tomato with them. Tomatoes were expensive. And, you know, eggs were nickel a dozen, I think. Something like that, don't you?
I don't remember.
And they laughed about me. All the other kids that got spending money, they bought candy, but I wanted tomatoes, fresh tomatoes.
If I got a nickel, I got one of those long, they were that long and that wide Hershey bars.
That was your favorite thing?
Oh, if I got a Hershey bar, like I say, that was stretched. I didn't eat it all at one time.
It would come in little squares
and had
tinfoil around it.
And what would you like better, Hershey bars or marshmallows?
Don't make me choose. I did wish, I remember when I was a kid, I was wishing that I'd get sick. I wouldn't be sick, but I had something that the doctor would order that I eat one Hershey bar a day. Yeah. And that would have been wonderful.
Hershey-itis.
Chocolate. I'm still mad. It's chocolate.
Well, I think we're about ready to wrap things up. If you have any last thoughts on this?
Oh, I'll probably have some after it's all over.
Well,
I think it did. It was hard on people, but I think the kids that grew up during that time appreciated the good times that came along, possibly more than their kids have learned them.
And if it helped them, what helped me, at least they really held, once they started to work, they could hold on to their money. You didn't buy anything until you had the money to pay for it.
And you learned to give a day's labor for your salary. If you wanted a job, you got there on time and you worked and
saved your money.
And I was lucky enough there. I got one job and I stayed with it until I quit working.
That's right. You started school, then you worked full time, and then you quit working.
And I quit working and I just went home. And I didn't have to go out hunting a job. First one I got was, I was asked if I would stay. And that was great. And it was at a time when it was hard to find a job, because I was wondering if I was going to be able to find a job when I was graduating, because jobs were scarce.
Well, you know, women were beginning to learn to do things that some women never had done before. They were learning to drive back in the dirty 30s, and they were learning to turn shirt collars and do sewing where they maybe never had before, and shortcuts and things. And I think it really kind of prepared them for the war when the husbands went off. And we had a man came back. He had worked on Hoover Dam. And he was something dog had swung from the ropes and used the jackhammer. Read up on Hoover Dam. They didn't have unions back then. They stayed and dealing to load you up in trucks, and you worked about 12-hour shifts, and it was ungodly hot. And it was good money. I mean, we wouldn't think it was good now for that kind of danger. They lost quite a number of people, but it was good then. And he was sending the money to the, he'd send one check to his wife and one to the bank so they could have And when he got back, his wife was gone, his kids were scattered. The doctor had sent her to Colorado to the sanitarium for TB. And they had just farmed the kids out with different relatives. And it was up to him to find them. You know, they didn't ask him or keep him well informed.
Yeah.
But I just remember he had supper, and I thought, well, you know, he ought to just go sock somebody or something.
For taking his kids.
But I thought, and I don't know, but he did have the money in the bank that didn't go broke. My folks had $316, I believe, in the bank when they closed the bank and it went broke. It was State Bank, I believe.
They lost that money?
And that was a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
And a lot of people lost that money.
Well, like my dad said one time, he said he went to the bank. He didn't have $50, but he needed to have something he needed a certain kind of plow that he wanted to use, and he could buy one. That was still horse days. And he said he had a hard time talking the bankers into loaning him $50 to buy.
Well, they laugh and talk about Texoma. Used to go in there, and this old boy said, was giving him a collateral. He was going to borrow $30 for something. And he had so many chickens, so many ducks, so many turkey. Well, he said, is that all? And he said, well, I got the wife and kids, but they're more expensive than they are collateral, but you can put them on there.
That's why he was borrowing the money, so you need to have.
That's right.
Well, I think I'm through talking in this if you are. For my face, I think.